Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, along with
WTOP Living Editor Rachel Nania.
And today is a really special guest here. We have the Year of Magical Thinking at Arena Stage with the one and only Kathleen Turner.
Hello.
You recognize that voice.
That iconic voice.
The best movie voice since Lauren Bacall, right? And right here next to her is the director of the play at Arena Stage, Gay Taylor Upchurch.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I want to dive into the play, but before we do that really quick, I wanted to get your thoughts on, because I know you played in Virginia Woolf, your thoughts on Edward Albee's passing.
Oh, I'm going to miss him very much. He was he was very dear to me. Edward was not always the kindest man, you could say, but we had a wonderful relationship. I have something that I will always treasure, that the closing night on Broadway, he left an envelope on my desk of his stationery, you know, and a handwritten note. It says, "You're the reason I'm a playwright."
Wow.
Yeah, I'm keeping that one, boy.
That's fantastic.
I would frame that.
Okay, so now tell us a little bit about this play coming to Arena Stage, The Year of Magical Thinking.
The Year of Magical Thinking, the play, is Joan Didion adapted her book, The Year of Magical Thinking, which came out in 2005, which chronicles the year after her husband's death and how she dealt with the grief. And then putting it in play form, I think, was such a smart move, because there's something about a live audience coming together, and particularly with Kathleen saying her words, that really puts us all in this position of being able to approach this big subject of grief that we hardly ever talk about. And she does it in a way that's funny and honest and revealing, and that I think is really ultimately life-affirming, because we're all in it together.
I think absolutely life-affirming. I think one of our national traits is very much to say, no, I don't want to talk about this, you know, and it's not going to happen to me and or anyone I care for and this sort of thing. And that kind of denial doesn't add anything to your life, or, you know, or to others. And her words, her choices, are so exquisite, truly, that it just gives you an understanding. At the same time, makes it accessible, makes it, without it being frightening or, oppressive.
Yeah. Huh? And what made the piece of literature so great is her very realistic way of writing. How do you kind of channel Joan Didion when you're on stage? How do you get that across to the audience?
I was here a few years ago. I did a Molly Ivins piece, right? Red Hot Patriot. I never feel as though I'm channeling someone else. Mm-hmm. To me, it's always a fresh creation. That where, you know, a melding, a coming together of my understanding and the material that I'm given to work with. So I don't know about channeling Joan, you know, but
you know, I love seeing where Joan and Kathleen intersect, which is I think that they're both very forthright and honest and very funny, that have a very sly sense of humor. And so being in the room and seeing where both the text and where what Kathleen's bringing to it come together, that's really been special for me.
Okay, great. And now you are the only one on stage. It's a one-woman show.
It's another one of these 75 to 80-minute monologues. Why? Why do I keep doing this?
Masochist.
Well, is it difficult to carry the audience yourself?
You know, it's such an extraordinary relationship with the audience. First of all, the theater that we're in, the Kogod Cradle, is this wonderful, intimate space with these woven wood walls that makes everyone feel as if right away, you know, they're in somebody's home kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then I just love people, and I love talking to them, and I love looking in their eyes and having them, like, flinch a little. But
like we did when you walked in here.
Right. No.
So Rachel's obviously a huge fan of the book, and we've talked about sort of the words, you know, that Didion used. But from a director's standpoint, how do you bring this sucker visually to life? You know, what are we going to see when we show up there in the cradle?
Well, from my first conversation that I had with Kathleen, she immediately said, you know, I would love for this to feel like I've just invited the audience in for tea, and that this is an invitation and it's an intimate setting. And so that piece of the conversation really helped to drive the set design discussions that I had with our set designer, Daniel Zimmerman. And so we came up with the idea of, well, why not? Let's have her, you know, she's just invited everyone into her apartment. So basically, you'll see when you walk in pieces of basically an Upper East Side Manhattan apartment with a little bit of a California life sprinkled in, since that was so
touch important. Of office.
Yeah, touch of office.
It's kind of an amalgamation of the areas that she spends the most of her time in. Mm.
And I really wanted there to be on stage several places for Kathleen to be able to go, mm-hmm. So that she could, you know, we could physicalize certain portions of the piece. It's divided into these chapters, and it made sense to me to have different chapters sort of live mostly in one section of the stage or another. So that's what we've put together.
Yeah.
Great.
Gotcha. You said this was, you've done several plays at Arena Stage before, right? What were
the
other?
This would be, actually, this is my fourth.
Fourth.
But the first one was in like 83, 84.
Wow.
I did Midsummer Night's Dream as right after I finished Body Heat. My next job was here at Arena
wow.
Stage doing Titania and Hippolyta.
the steam was still coming off.
It was. Well, and then, of course, then we had Titania was of the water and we had a sunken pool. So I'm doing, you know, backflips into the pool all the time. Oh, I had the most fun. Anyway, it was quite a... Okay, I'm going to say it's splashy production. anyway, but so that was my first. But then I came, I guess, 4 years ago with Red Hot Patriot, Molly Ivins, and then 2 years ago, Mother Courage.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's I love the arena.
But no really no do. Splashing this time, right? No pools?
No. No.
Well, Arena Stage, you've come here, like you just said, a few times before. You also have Jason Uncovered, a local connection.
Yes. A lot of our listeners might not know that you went to UMBC and studied theater up in Baltimore.
My last year I was at UMBC, under Herbert Blau. He had been given the entire Department of Art, you know, to take over. And he saw me in a play in St. Louis and asked me if I would come work with his company. And under that, in that year, we created the first new theater festival, experimental theater festival.
Oh, cool.
In the country, really. And it all happened over at UMBC.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It was
so
most exciting.
How did you then make your way to New York? Right after you graduated, you moved up?
Oh, I did not wait for what I did was I said, send my mother the diploma, the car is packed.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
That's really cool. And what were some of those early productions? Was it with Danny Aiello?
Oh, that was my first Broadway.
Yeah.
Was Gemini. Yeah. The first year I was in New York, I got a Broadway play. Danny Aiello was in it. Jonathan Hadari. Some terrific, terrific actors.
Yeah.
You know, next year, 17, will be my 40th anniversary as a professional actor. So I'm going to have a party.
That's a really good idea.
That's cool. You mentioned Body Heat. We'd be remiss not to dive into that real quickly. What was it like? Because that was Lawrence Kasdan's directorial debut, right? He had written Empire Strikes Back and Raiders.
Right. He'd been writing and everything.
Right.
But he wrote and wanted to direct Body Heat. And in fact, I found out sort of later that it was Lucas's support that, because of his work with Larry earlier, that really pushed this project through and with me and Bill, yeah.
I always thought it had sort of a great, like, You have like the double indemnity murder plot against the husband. You have some out of the past the beach
scene.
No,
it was definitely the film noir that Larry was going for. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty scary. Yeah.
Okay. What was it like working with him compared to, let's say, because you worked with Bob Zemeckis in Romancing the Stone and then Roger Rabbit, which was when I first heard you. I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Yeah, well, I know. Oh, what I always loved his response is, you know, you have no idea how hard it is looking like a woman the way I look. And he says, you have no idea how hard it is looking at a woman looking the way you... Anyway.
Anyway, this is great.
You know, but I worked with Larry also and Bill also then on Accidental Tourist.
Yeah.
And that was, I think that's one of my real favorites, huh?
Definitely. Great. John Huston, Prizzi's honor. Because talk about, he was in Chinatown, and then Roger Rabbit was kind of a quasi-remake of Chinatown in a weird way. If you look at it, the highway is water and power.
The red car line.
Yeah, it totally is. But what was like Mr. John Huston? He's a legend.
John was grand. And at the time, this was, Prizzi's Honor was his last real, you know, total film, because his emphysema was so terrible that even then he could go nowhere without an oxygen tank, and he would literally count the steps he'd have to take before he would get up from the chair. And so consequently, he left a lot of the blocking and everything to Jack and me, right. Which I thought was great fun. So I don't know, you'll see one scene where that starts with, you know, our getting up from the arm of a sofa. And that was Jack's idea. You know, they had me thrown over the arm of a sofa. Then the bedroom scene where we're rolling, like it's, we called it Who's on Top. You know,
not who's on first.
And we fall off the foot of the bed. That was mine. So I got to really participate in a way. But luckily by then also I knew enough about, you know, filmmaking that I knew how, what we could do. Yeah. But John was, we used to play backgammon because he was a major gambler. Yeah. You know, huge poker games and backgammon games and everything. And I would be beating the pants off him. And then he'd start rolling double sixes. So for Christmas, I got him some silver dice that I knew were not loaded. Were absolutely, you know, okay, right. Didn't make any difference.
Might as well have been loaded.
Yeah.
So you'd won 2 Golden Globes at that point, and then you get an Oscar nom for Peggy Sue Got Married with Coppola.
Yeah.
Now, what's his directorial? I mean, he's like a god. He's a filmmaking god.
He's wonderful. He's wonderful. But his design team that he's used over and over again in order to, you know, we didn't do any effects to change between the past and the present. I didn't do any makeup, you know, to change the age from 42 to 16. It was all literally in the acting. But in the past, his design team would spray the street, say, with a sort of a purple wash, and the sidewalks had a yellow tinge, and the lawns had a spray. So that everything was sort of hand-painted. Yeah. You know, a photo that you've seen that's been painted? Mm-hmm. That kind of idea. Mm-hmm. And it was so subtle. You know, at the very top of the film, you'll see Peggy Sue in, you know, looking into the mirror, getting ready to go, yeah? And the camera pulls through the mirror to the back of a body double, right, who's doing the same thing. So you're seeing the front and back of this woman at the same time, which is not physically possible. But if you accept it, then you've agreed to go on this magic tour.
Yeah.
You know?
That's great.
Well, this is your first, your directorial debut at Arena Stage.
Yes. And
what's it like working with Kathleen Turner?
Well, close your ears. It's been amazing. I mean, even from our first conversation, I thought, oh, this is fun. We're thinking about the play in the same way. And so it's been a joy. And even though the play itself is about grief and the struggle with that, we've actually had a really good time in the rehearsal room. I don't know if it's true that sometimes if you work on a play that has a dark subject matter, you actually have a better time in the rehearsal room than you do if you're working on a comedy.
I don't know.
Escape it a little bit.
What do you think that is? Yeah,
maybe. In the off time, yeah.
So, but no, it's been, and Arena has been a dream. I mean, the theater where we're doing this is perfectly suited to this material, and I'm excited to be in that space. And I've always wanted to work here, so it's been great.
God, I can't praise it enough. Arena, the production values, the people working there, their commitment, you know, to the material and the work itself is so high. It's so good. Yeah.
And we are 1,000% supported in the rehearsal room. Mm. From the first day we walked in, and you know, all of the basically what we want on stage was already recreated for us in the room, which is just gorgeous. Mm. Really fun.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Hey, we all, Kathleen Turner's filmography is very famous and all, but I would like to know more about you. You know, this is your debut, but where did you grow up? How did
your debut at Arena?
Yeah.
Yes. I am originally from Jackson, Mississippi. I grew up there, although my parents split when I was young. My dad moved to New York, so I also spent a lot of time coming up to Manhattan. And I was in dance, not in theater, growing up, and then ended up eventually teaching 7th grade English and dancing in a small dance company in North Carolina. And then when I stopped dancing, I missed the performing arts. And the town where I was, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, there's a school, North Carolina School of the Arts. And I started going there to just see theater. And it was really my first, you know, experience with real plays. And I'd seen some musicals before, but I'd never seen a play, actually. And So Gerald Friedman was running the program, and he asked me to apply, and felt like, given my background in dance, and I'd also done a lot of painting and art history, that he felt like those were good tools for a director. And so he said, just come. It's a public art school. You can see if you like it while you're here. And that really changed my life. I don't think many people would do that now. They would say, go in, direct, and then come back. And he just said, come and learn and see if it suits you. And I loved it. And then after I graduated, I moved to New York and started assisting and directing, you know, whenever, however I could. And then eventually, you know, landed a few jobs that helped get some traction. I direct mostly new plays. I was associate director on the Bridge Project with Sam Mendes and got to tour the world with a Shakespeare and Chekhov play with amazing actors. And that was really, I think, my MFA.
Yeah. Did you pick anything up from Sam Mendes?
Oh, sure. Yeah. He's a great mentor, and he is, you know, he has such a way of putting productions together, working with actors, and I think whoever you assist, you can sort of pick up.
When I was trying to find a director that I wanted to work with, first of all, I wanted to be a woman. I really felt very strongly that this material and me needs to work with a woman. And GT's name came up several times with some wonderful people. So that kind of cleared the decks.
That made it easy, huh? Great.
Does the 7th grade English teacher come out? Do you remember when you first read this actual book? You didn't teach it to your class, did
you? I did not.
That's
teach
a little
this
heavy for 7th grade.
No, we were doing King Arthur Legend and Mark Twain, which was great. But no, I do. I love this book. Yeah, I mean, I think that actually, you know, the combination of my literature background and dance actually is very much about theater. It's very much a, you know, coming together of text and movement and looking at a space and figuring out lines in space and how to bring a text to life. So I do think my literature background plays a part in that. Sure.
Do you remember when you first saw a Kathleen Turner, either movie or was it
yes,
on Friends?
It was Romancing the Stone.
Chandler's cross-dressing dad, right?
Yeah. He still calls me dad.
Chenandala Bong. That's right.
No, I do remember. It was Romancing the Stone, which was my favorite movie for years. I watched it. I admitted this to Kathleen. There was a year of my life where I think I watched it every weekend. Yeah. It was I loved it so much. I loved it so much. Yeah.
It's such fun.
It's so fun. It's so fun. Mm.
Kathleen, how did any of your you know, previous theater roles, because you played Mrs. Robinson in London, right? And then
Broadway. But do you want to hear the story about that? You'll like this, Rachel. Well, we built it and created it in London, right? And the writer-director, Terry Johnson, said, look, if you can do if you can figure out any way to have the impact that being nude will have on Benjamin, you know, then we'll try it, you know, like just underwear or a slip or something. And no, nothing was going to be as impactful as just dropping that towel, right? Anyway, so I said, all right, that's the way we'll go. And so we played 6 months on the West End. And then they said, we were sold out at every single performance because it's also a very funny and a very smart piece. And they said, well, we'll bring it to New York. And I said, no. I said, you know, Americans are so mixed up about sex. You know, I don't need
this.
You're
not ready for this.
I don't need this. I don't need to deal with the attitude. I don't need any of that. Mm-hmm. So I went off and I was doing another play, touring another play. And then I got a script. Now, at this point, I was 46, going on 47, I guess. I got a film script where the character was described as 37, but still attractive. And I called the producer in London. I said, we're going to Broadway. That's it. So there I was, naked on Broadway at 48, and the hell with you guys.
That's
you
a good show title awesome. Right there. Naked on Broadway at 48.
At 48 and the hell with you guys. Wonderful.
Love it.
Rach, as someone who is obsessed with the book, did you is there a certain, like, you know, chunk of the book that you're excited to see on stage?
Oh, my recreated? God. Well, I mean, all of it. Really, what I love about the book is just how raw it is and the repetition and just... It's just real. It's something everyone can relate to and everyone needs to relate to. We all go through grief at some point, and I feel like it's very important to bring that to a large audience.
Well, so do we.
Yeah,
very absolutely. Much so. And I guess, you know, this is why very much I think Joan wrote it was, you know, she says at one point, you know, you expect to be driven crazy by grief. You don't expect to become actually crazy. Yeah. You know? So she starts taking notes. Mm-hmm. And out of the notes, you know, grew the book. And I think it wasn't so much a desire, only, well, I think she does want to share as a tool, you know, in a way for other people. But it's a whole, what's the word I want? A course, a tutorial. Huh?
It is, yeah.
In part of our lives.
Yeah. I think I read somewhere that she couldn't find another piece of literature that just really was very straightforward about this subject matter.
Yeah. That would give her solace, yeah.
She also talks a little bit in the book, and you can find traces of this in the play, but about the fact that in modern America, we have sort of pushed grief to the side and death to the side as something that we don't like to talk about very much. And then, in fact, the most important thing you can do is be strong. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of a look at, you know, what's the other side of that? And why have we said that the most important thing you can do is be strong? And what if you're just not at the moment? And that, you know, and what is that? So she really opens the door for that, I think, to say you don't have to go through this sort of, you know, clamping down and driving yourself through.
And saying, I'm fine, I'm fine.
Yeah.
love when the social worker at the hospital called her a good customer.
Yeah.
She's like,
A cool customer.
Thank you.
Yeah. Alliteration.
And it's like, a cool customer.
Jeez, thanks
like,
a lot.
What is a bad customer? Like someone who breaks down and actually like shows emotion or, you know.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Speaking of the grief, is there anything personal that, you know, from your own life that you tap into to get into the grief, either as a director or star?
Well, I kind of started on this journey when I lost my mom last year and had her for 92 years. And my brother and I were with her. It was as good as it gets, I guess, you know. But that, I miss her. I miss her so much. And so that started me looking into this world. And this is the best material that exists on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about your mother. What was her name? What was she like?
My mom, Patsy McGee. she's very strong, you know. My father died when I was 17, and there were four of us, you know, four kids. Anyway, two were already in college, and I was just about to finish high school, and then I had a younger brother. She believed, as we all do, as I do, in service. She was, I'll tell you, this woman, she used to get me, I give it twice a year, I go back to Springfield, Missouri, where she lived, for a big fundraiser benefit. You know, she got to call the shots twice a year. She got me to fly in, you know, shake hands with 500 people. Anyway, so like one year it was the Girl Scouts, another year it was the library, another year it was the new wing on the art museum, another year. But her one of the causes that she was most adamant about was CASA, court-appointed special advocates, because in Missouri and that area, the meth, it's the heart of meth country in our country. And the children, you know, are so terribly endangered. So that was a big one. So anyway, she'd just say, well, as long as you're famous.
That's fantastic. If our listeners are dealing with grief, maybe they've lost a loved one, how might coming to this be a therapeutic experience?
Well, I think what's great about the show is that in coming to see theater in general is that it does put us all in the same position together and in the same room together. And so I do think there's something about it where you walk away feeling less alone in whatever it is that you've gone through.
Yeah, I think that, yes, people will certainly identify or hear, put into words, maybe for the first time, thoughts or power feelings that they've had. But the glory, the wonder of theater is that you sit next to a perfect stranger, perhaps, and if the show is good, praise the Lord. You know, anyway,
sure, it's awesome.
you start to breathe together, and you hold your breath at. And you laugh at the same instant, and you become part of something greater than alone. Mm. And this would be the show to go for that, boy.
I was almost going to say, with every pause and silence, you can start hearing people in the room breathing and just kind of fidgeting in their seat. And it's like group therapy.
Not in my
for
shows.
200.
There's no fidgeting.
No. It's total silence and frozen.
Fantastic. Well, do you have any more questions?
No, yeah. Just, why should they come out? What's the final sell?
Oh, who's taking this one?
I think for me, the big sell is that it's Kathleen Turner and Joan Didion.
Yeah.
Feels like a no-brainer.
And GT.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
But don't come October 7th? No?
Well, no, I'm not going to say that. No, preview start October 7th. But I do want to ask something. Now, if you come October 7th or 8th and you are one of my first audiences, come back a month later, okay? You know, give me a second chance.
I bet it'll be just as amazing.
Yeah, right out of the gate. Again, it's at Arena Stage from October 7th through November 20th. See it multiple times, as Ms. Turner just said. Again, it's called The Year of Magical Thinking. And Rachel and I, we're so thrilled to have you in here. Thanks so much.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.